Hello, and welcome to the Employee Safety Podcast from Alert Media, where you'll hear advice from experienced safety leaders on how to protect your people and business. I'm Peter Steinfeld. Today's guest is Daniel Devery, Director of Enterprise Crisis Management at Assurant, a premier global protection company that safeguards and services connected devices, homes, and automobiles in partnership with the world's leading brands. Daniel and his team identify and respond to risks that could impact employee safety or business operations, helping ensure informed decision-making and coordinated incident response. Daniel speaks specifically about the organizational risks associated with geopolitical conflicts, how to assess their potential impacts, and best practices for preparedness and mitigation. Let's listen in. Welcome, Daniel. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Peter. Glad to be here.
Let's go ahead and start by talking more about your role. What does your daily calendar look like leading enterprise crisis management at Assurant?
So we are a pretty small team here at Assurant. We cover the gambit of travel security, monitoring for events that can impact our employee safety, well-being, and our business operations. And then we also help support the executive protection team with the travel security component of things. We report directly to our chief security officer, and we mostly work as the orchestrator for incident response. So in addition to monitoring for events that can impact our business ops or our employee safety, we're also the first domino to fall in our response efforts. So we contextualize the event. We outline what employees are in the exposure area, how many travelers we have there, how many sites we have in that sphere of impact, and then we escalate that up to our incident response teams, who are then in charge of responding and leading the response efforts to a particular incident.
That's a lot to do, and there's a lot going on in the world right now. So which risks are top of mind for you?
Geopolitics is typically a buzzword that folks throw around, and it's one of the threads that kind of connects everything, right? So for us, this has been pretty critical lately because it's in the news. Anytime we've got a lot of interest in a particular topic, we have to contextualize whether or not that's going to impact us as an organization.
I can imagine a lot of this stuff can be pretty arcane and obscure. So how do you contextualize these geopolitical conflicts for your just general colleagues and leaders to make it real and actionable for them?
So I think putting it into a business context is really critical. So pulling on the thread a little bit more and trying to connect the dots and outlining how certain vendors might be impacted. Obviously, our employees are going to be top of mind, and it might not be something that's immediately apparent if there's going to be a problem in 6 months, 8 months, a year and a half from now. That's something we want to put on our leadership's radar in order to make sure that they have the long enough runway in order to make sure that they can make adjustments to any business processes or strategic outlooks that they might have in the works.
I think that's pretty cool because oftentimes when people think of crisis management, they think of like after the boom has happened. It's like you jump in, you help them out, but you're getting involved way in advance. How's that been received by the business? What do the executives say to you when you come to them with this kind of intel?
To your point, crisis management is oftentimes right after something goes off. How are we going to react? How are we going to minimize the damage? And if you can have an over-the-horizon look on a problem that you can identify before it's an actual problem, then you don't have to go to the mattresses, so to speak, and really get into the crisis mode. You can work on it while it's still a smaller problem and kind of hedge your bets and make sure that you've got at least the plans in place, even if it's something to deviate away from. You put the plan into training and the processes and you stress test them. So that way, when something does actually occur, you start to build up that muscle memory within the organization. So I think Eisenhower said, the plan is nothing and planning is everything. So getting the teams together and making sure that everybody understands what's going to be asked of them. And so that way they have enough freedom in the moment to actually assess the situation and figure out, hey, the plan isn't going to work. So let's reinvent the wheel on the fly and figure out how we're going to solve this or work the problem, because dealing with a small problem now is infinitely easier than dealing with a major problem in a year and a half.
Can you give us a real-world example that you had recently?
We're keeping an eye on Colombia right now. The peace talks with the splinter guerrilla groups have started to fall through, which has led to increasing rates of violent crime throughout the country, not necessarily in the capital, which typically the capital regions are the last to really start to feel these major shifts. But in other major metropolitan areas, we are seeing spikes in crime. And while we have interests in the capital, Bogota, and we haven't seen major crime spike in that area so far, it's definitely something that we're keeping an eye on because it's going to shape the employee experience in the country. So it will probably be on their news and it'll be part of that 24/7 news cycle. Making sure that we have a understanding of major problems that are going on in the countries where we have significant interests or employee populations will be important because, again, the contextualization of those events for us as an enterprise is one thing, but for the locals on the ground, it's going to be another, or it could be another. It could be the same, but it's often different. And it could be that we as the enterprise feel that it's a major issue because safety is always relative. I like to use Mexico City as an example. They've got really well-attended protests. And you take somebody from Wichita, Kansas, and they're on a business trip in Mexico City, and they see a 15,000-person demonstration. They're going to have their spidey senses tingling, and they're going to feel a little bit uneasy. But if you ask someone from Mexico City in that neighborhood, like, hey, what's going on? They're like, oh, it's just Tuesday. So figuring out what that context looks like from a local perspective and then understanding how that fits within the enterprise outlook and different risk levels. And then you start to find a happy medium. And if you have these conversations with folks on the ground to figure out what their perspective is and what they're nervous about, it might differentiate between what we're looking at from a global perspective, and then you can start to massage different policies and procedures to address the specific concerns of the local population while also meeting enterprise guidelines. From a real world perspective, when we bring our incident response teams together, our human resources team is a critical component of that incident response team. We call them IRTs. And when we get our employee exposure report, we reach out to our human resources team to let them know, hey, these are the people that we have in the impact area. These are the people that we're able to get in contact with, and these are the people that we are unable to get in contact with. So typically, from that human resources perspective, what we're looking to do is provide our managers of the people on the ground, whether they're local or whether they're international, right? Because we're an international company. We might have folks reporting to people in Europe or in Asia or across the Americas. So being able to cross those boundaries and make sure that our employees have the appropriate resources is something that we're very concerned about.
I like that example you gave of Mexico City and someone from Wichita, Kansas, who's never been there visiting. A big part of what you're doing is making sure that everyone within the organization is safe so they can be maximally productive. And if someone goes somewhere and they don't know what to expect, they don't have that muscle memory you talked about before, they don't feel safe, so they can't be productive. So getting ahead of these things can actually be really good for an organization.
Yes, absolutely. And that's where the travel security component really comes into play. So we monitor our travel fairly closely and we provide pre-travel security briefs to our employees as part of that onboarding process when they book their travel. So while these reports come across, we have a lower threshold for employee assistance for travelers than we do for the local population. So with that protest example, we're pretty quick to push out notifications of various known unrest points or planned protests to our travelers for that exact reason. And then also we have the ability to provide support for them both physically, medically, and then mentally if they are experiencing duress while traveling.
Well, it's often tough for our listeners just to get resources for general safety initiatives. So how do you gain leadership buy-in for the time and resources required to monitor geopolitical risks that may not impact the business right away?
So I think that's all about a give and take. Figure out what they're interested in, what keeps them up at night, and then contextualize those events for them. I think the 24/7 news cycle does a pretty good job of keeping people on edge, right? You never have a news anchor come on at 6 o'clock or the 8 o'clock news and say, we don't have anything for you tonight. You can you could take the rest of the hour off. We've got 3 minutes of good news for you and then we'll tuck you in. So figuring out what your leadership is interested in and then understanding what the company views as a risk, start to look for buy-in from various pillars in the organization, whether that's operations, your human resources. If you're not on the security team, understanding what the security team is looking for, business continuity purposes, those types of things. I like to start my reports off with a question. If I don't already have a relationship with the person that I'm sending this report to, asking them, hey, I've seen this. Is this something that's useful for you? Or is this something that you want more information on? And then you provide your memo or your report. And I think it's also important to keep it really brief because at the end of the day, everybody's busy and nobody wants to read a 5-page report. What I've found is useful is having an executive summary or key takeaways at the top of the report. And that's the 3 most important sentences that you've got in your next page and a half. And keep it really tight.
Yeah, I think that idea of being succinct is incredibly important. But before you can be succinct, you have to really understand what it is they need to know. And I think a really good nugget that you released there is this idea of collaboration. You have to seek to understand before you can seek to be understood, the old Stephen Covey saying. So it's not something you can do in a vacuum. Don't just go off into a closet and put together these reports and then hope people will read them or even just read the headlines. Talk to people, understand what they really care about, and then create a bespoke report that you know they'll actually pay attention to.
This is a little bit more difficult if you're in a remote or a hybrid space, but if you're in the office, try and find somebody at lunch or stop by their office and have a 30-second conversation. So that way it's not yet another email or Slack message and everybody's getting bombarded with all sorts of notifications. If you can make a personal connection and meet face-to-face, even if you're buying them coffee, like figure out what it is that they're interested in and then start to build that relationship. So that way, the best course of action is they come to you. And if you've built up that relationship, they say, hey, Peter, I saw this on the news last night. What are you seeing on your end? And then you can contextualize it from a business perspective and then ask for them to weigh in and then maybe share it with others. Who else do you think would be interested in this type of information? And then you start to grow your internal network that way and get more and more buy-in.
I think that's fantastic. So I guess historically, you don't just charge in and say, hey, we're going to sit down and I'm going to interview you and find out what's important. It's more just like drip, 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 a little bit at a time. Hey, here's what I'm here to do. Here's where I'm here to help. Here's someone else I've helped in the past. Anything on your mind? I'll come back and check with you later. And you just kind of work your way in over time. Is that how it works?
Yeah, absolutely. It's about building rapport and building trust. So if you can get yourself in the door as this source of truth, right? This is where critical vendors come into play too. We have a small team, so we rely fairly heavily on our vendors to help streamline that information because right now there's so much misinformation and disinformation out there that it's hard to discern what's true and what's not. Especially if your primary method of gathering information is through social media and things like that, which now that's a really popular way for everybody to get their information.
Yeah, it's a lot to digest. And you brought up this concept of sifting through the dis and the misinformation to understand what's real. But then there's also this concept of what's relevant. So do you actually share credible risks with leadership even when they don't appear to directly impact the organization? In other words, do you worry about the boy who cried wolf problem?
I think the boy who cried wolf problem is definitely real. So you have to have some sort of self-editing when you're pushing out these reports, especially at the onset of these relationships. But if you think that something will be important and you can contextualize it from a business perspective, whether that's continuity, if you know the company very well and you think there's a business opportunity that you could come to the table with, you can do that. But you have to explain yourself succinctly and tie it back to the business case. Because at the end of the day, everything should be focused around helping the business. Let's take a hurricane, for example, right? A hurricane comes through. And if we are able to get our teams back up and running faster than our competition, then we've got a leg up in that business segment. So it's all about preparation, response, and then mitigation.
Well, what advice would you give other leaders about identifying and mitigating geopolitical conflicts that could impact their particular business?
I think knowing the area that you have interests in, whether that's people, vendors, facilities, and understanding what the major players are, who they are, what their backgrounds are, that's always a great step. That way you're not playing catch up when something does happen. Understanding what the overall strategy is for a particular administration, but then also understanding how that strategy fits into the larger national strategy.
And it seems to me this is pretty relevant for just about any size organization, not just global giant corporations, but even smaller or even really small businesses, because something happening halfway around the world could impact their cost of doing business. So it's important to stay on top of this stuff.
Absolutely. I think the complexity of the global supply chain right now, even if you're a mom and pop repair shop, like the cost of automobile parts, particularly for foreign vehicles, are probably going to go high if they're not already. So what is that going to mean for your overall cost? Is there ways that you can cut corners on other things in order to keep your overall overhead low? Is that going to impact your ability to staff effectively because now the parts are more expensive and that's chipping away at your bottom line? Or is that going to decrease your customers because what used to be a $50 service is now a $100 service? And for a lot of small businesses, those add up and they really matter.
Well, as we start to wrap up here, how do you see the role of geopolitical awareness evolving in the future of enterprise security overall?
I think that it will become more involved in the day-to-day operations for a global security context. I think with the complexity of the global supply chain right now, coupled with the turbulence that we're seeing at the international stage, there's a lot of moving parts, and it's hard to keep track of how many parts are moving and who's doing what and how is that going to impact us as a business versus us as an employee base versus us as a supply chain team. So getting a better understanding of what the players are doing and what the goals of those major players are will help, again, getting you an over the horizon look at what might be coming down the pike.
Well, Daniel, thank you so much for being on the show. A lot of great material you shared.
Thank you, Peter. I appreciate the opportunity to be here.
To learn more about Daniel and his work with Assurant, click the links in the episode description. You can also watch the video highlights on Alert Media's YouTube. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review the show wherever you get your podcasts. Stay safe out there.
Thank you for listening to the Employee Safety Podcast from Alert Media, the industry's most intuitive emergency communication and threat intelligence solution. To learn more about how to protect your people and business during critical events, visit alertmedia.com. Until next time.